Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, I'm celebrating Thanksgiving and Christmas a little early here. I have in the studio three authors. Oh, this is a treat for me. I always love to have authors in the studio. And I have Johnny Clark, who I just learned is a legend in his... and we're going to be talking to him. And he is a fantastic military hero. He was awarded the Silver Star, three Purple Hearts. That's too many. Who wants all those Purple Hearts? I don't know why. And other combat decorations. And he has a really fantastic new book. It's called Walk a Little Farther with Me. And it's about a miracle that happened in his life. And so since I thought this is a day of miracles, I would have two authors who have written Christmas books, and they're fascinating. And the first one is Carol Post, and I love her book. It's called Bodyguard for Christmas, and it's made for Hallmark Channel, I tell you right now. And then also in the studio is Lorelei Confer. Don't you love that name? Lorelei Confer. I love it. Perfect, actually, for Christmas, too. And she's brought in two of her Christmas books, A Saddle Creek Christmas Romance, and then A Christmas Awakening. So I want to thank you all for coming in the studio today.
Thank you.
Okay, well, this is exciting. And as I said, at this time of the year, there's so much to be thankful for. I'm thankful that my son came down from Wisconsin, got out of the cold, and he's home, and he's wearing shorts. He's already had snow three times, and so I'm so happy that he's home. And so it's just fantastic for me. And to have three people in the studio is always a treat. So, Johnny, tell us about, we'll start with your story, because it is a story, literally, of a miracle that happened in your life. I know that it has already generated quite a few wonderful, wonderful reviews.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, some of them, I can't read them, they make me cry.
Well, it's a very moving story. So what do you want to tell us about it?
Well, I don't want to give the whole story away.
Yeah, don't give the whole story. Okay. The name, again, the name is Walk a Little Farther with Me.
I think telling how it, when I started writing that book, it took me 12 years to sit down and write it, because I really didn't know what God wanted me to do with such an incredible miracle. I mean, you don't want to be flippant with it. I just wasn't sure what I was supposed to do with this, and I've thought about it every day for 12 years, and it started when I started writing the book. I realized the only way, I mean, for somebody who doesn't know me, they're going to have to know me for this miracle or this story to mean anything. So I ended up writing a biography, and that wasn't my intention, but that's what it ended up being, and I had to take the reader from my childhood and all the way to the Marine Corps and all the way to a mountain called Greybeard.
Well, let's step back a little, because you had, in those 12 years, you were very busy writing, and you've written some books that in the military world have been, I mean, they are so famous. Everybody recommends them because they are in their field of military writing. There's one very funny one too, but your books are wonderful. So, which one of your military books, Gung Ho, which
Guns Up?
Guns Up. I'm sorry, Guns Up, and a couple others.
Oh, Gunner's Glory. No Better Way to Die.
Oh, No Better Way to Die is a great book.
Yeah, you really liked that one.
That was the one, yeah.
Yeah, that's one that was almost a movie. I thought
exactly.
For sure. It stuck a cigar in my mouth. And then Semper Fidelis. Semper Fidelis, not long ago, became the number one war book on Amazon. And it's been out of print for like 20 years, but it still made it all the way to the number one book. So that was kind of neat. And that was mostly because of my girl Friday. I have a wonderful young lady who does the social media stuff for me, because I hate computers and they hate me. So she turned that book into the number one war book. So that was kind of neat. And then the Old Corps, Section 8. Section 8 is on audio, and so is Guns Up.
And it's a funny book, a very funny book.
I crack myself up on Section 8. I myself up. But it's that, you know, with humor, you never know. My own son doesn't get it. And I know another lady whose husband has to read it to her because she cries laughing so much she can't read it. So either you don't get it at all, or evidently you really love it. So
you know, with all of this military background, let's talk a minute about, as I said, why did you want to get 3 Purple Hearts? You should, you know, this is, people say, you know, what, for the younger generation, some of you people don't understand that, boy, you got hurt for those things.
Well, in the 5th Marine Regiment, when I was in Nam, we had no machine gunners that spent 13 months in Nam and came home. They were all killed or wounded. So it wasn't that uncommon for a machine gunner to get hit a few times.
And that was your specialty?
Yeah, I was a machine gunner.
How much does a machine gun weigh?
24.6 pounds, the M60.
Yeah.
But then you got to throw all the ammo in it.
It's heavy.
It's heavy. Yeah.
It's heavy. It's a heck of a thing.
Yeah, it is. It's an incredible weapon. A lot of old Marines still prefer it over a lot of the newer machine guns.
And of course, you did so many wonderful things in the military. And
this came out of the military. Yeah. You know, and I didn't intend to make this a war book either. But you know, I can't very well write about myself without telling some war stories, and because Mitchell Page plays such an important role in this book, Sergeant Mitchell Page won the Medal of Honor on Guadalcanal, and I interviewed him on his deathbed for my book Gunner's Glory, and the man's remarkable. He's the Marine that Hasbro Toys designed the G.I. Joe doll in honor of, so he's a really famous old Marine. And when I interviewed him on his deathbed, he told me about what a miracle that happened to him on Guadalcanal. And I mean, it's a mind-blowing miracle. And what made it even more impressive is when it happened. You know, it was at a point where we could have lost the Battle of Guadalcanal. And it was a race between him and a Japanese soldier to get to the only remaining machine gun, because all the machine gunners had been killed and wounded, or they were all gone. It was one machine gun position. If the Japanese got to that first, we probably would have lost the Battle of Guadalcanal. He got to it. He went to move forward to chamber around a heavy 30 cal. And when he leaned forward to chamber around, he was frozen in place, and he could not move. And he told me that he was never at more peace in his life. He said, I knew that the Japanese soldier had dropped point blank, had dropped down with an Ambu machine gun, has a 30-round clip. And he said, I knew I was going to die, but I've never been at more peace in my life. I couldn't move. I was frozen in place. It was like a tractor beam. It was like a Star Trek moment, you know. He said he was frozen. There was nothing in the world he could do. The Japanese soldier fired all 30 rounds. The rounds burned him from his chin to his chest. So it just went, all of them went right under his throat. And then he was released. He said he fell forward, chambered around in the 30, killed the Japanese soldier. And God then revealed to him that, yep, I did this. So it's, anyway, that incredible miracle that happened to him was amazing, but I hadn't given it another thought for at least 3 years. You know, I mean, you write a book and then you move on, you're working on a new book. I certainly didn't forget it. When somebody tells you a story like that on their deathbed, you don't forget it. But I certainly never expected anything like that to happen to me, and it did.
Well, so that led to the story of your miracle, and that's why when I was thinking about doing this program, I thought it would be appropriate here just before Thanksgiving. Excuse me. I think allergies or something here, that we would talk to two authors who, obviously, Christmas is important. Carol. Oh. Well, Carol, I've lost my voice here. Now I need a miracle. Carol, listen, let's play Johnny. We have something special for Johnny.
From the author of gut-wrenching novels Guns Up and Gunner's Glory, now a gut-wrenching comedy, Section 8. One fan writes, Section 8 is inspired insanity. Johnny Clark should receive the Pulitzer Prize and his commitment papers in the same ceremony. You will laugh till it hurts. Section 8. It's 1946, and President Harry Truman has two goals in life. Dump the U.S. Marine Corps and get reelected. Can he convince Congress that the Marine Corps is obsolete? He'll try. But first, he wants to use them one last time. There's something he needs them to do. A little mission to China to steal something that one of his contributors need. It's dangerous, but who cares? Marines are expendable, or so he thinks. What could possibly go wrong? A lawsuit by the Vatican? An attempted assassination by a dead assassin? Flamethrower sermons? If that's not enough, there's a missing A-bomb. This book has it all. Even a love story. Remember, Section 8 is only a temporary state. You Hope, written by a true American hero. You'll love this book, now available on Amazon. So get it today. Section 8 by Johnny Clark. Semper Fi.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I hope I have recovered. Anyway, I am so happy to now introduce the two authors who have written Christmas books. And it is so wonderful at Christmas time to have a collection of books around. If you have your family over and you have downtimes and you're busy, you know, between shopping and you just need to sit down and relax and get into the spirit of Christmas and to remember the miracle of Christmas. And both of these women have written wonderful, wonderful books. Carol Post, I just met her. Carol, what is the name of the organization you were kind enough to invite me to speak to?
The Tampa Area Romance Authors.
And what is your position there?
I was until last month. For the last 4.5 years, I've been the vice president of programs, so I was responsible for bringing in all of the speakers.
For inviting me. I was so grateful. It was wonderful. It was just a wonderful gathering of authors to see the spirit and to see the excitement of all of you authors who really get out there and you know, try to connect with readers and try to bring them. I love romance. I think it's just wonderful, and particularly at Christmas time. And your book, I was thrilled with your book. It's called Bodyguard for Christmas. And so why don't you tell us about it? Where'd you get the idea? I thought it was very clever. Now, Johnny is one of his things is, I mean, he is big into all of the martial arts. And so, and Johnny, you have what do you have?
I'm a ninth degree.
That's
as high as you can go in Taekwondo.
Yeah, he's the best. Yeah. I mean, he's amazing. And so why don't you tell us about your character and what you developed in this story, which I, as I said, is called Bodyguard for Christmas.
Okay, yes. The one thing that's different about this book from my others, when I was actually plotting out this book, my critique partner had suggested that I do one where instead of the hero protecting the heroine, it's the heroine protecting the hero. And I thought, that would be fun, that would be interesting, but I don't think Harlequin would go for that. I write for love-inspired suspense. Love-inspired is Harlequin's Christian line, so there's a faith thread throughout, you know, light faith thread in addition to the romance and the suspense. And I had never read one where the heroine was protecting the hero, so I kind of just let that suggestion go, and then my editor emailed me and said, how about doing one where the heroine is protecting the hero instead of the other way around? So it's like, okay, I guess I'm supposed to do one of these. So that was a lot of fun. My heroine is a ex-military police turned bodyguard.
But she's a little thing.
She is, yep. She's only like 5'2". But she's strong and well-trained and everything. And the hero is an assistant district attorney who comes home one day and finds his babysitter bound and gagged and two masked men carrying his four-year-old son out the back door. And he had lost his wife 6 months earlier, brain aneurysm. And so he and his son are facing their first Christmas without her. And so, you know, in addition to the suspense and all of that going on, there's a healing theme that goes throughout the book. So he ends up hiring her to, you know, the company
to be the bodyguard. And it's a delightful little story. What is nice about it, as I said, when I was reading it, I thought, yeah, why isn't this on Hallmark? This would be a really nice. They could really make one of those, you know, made for TV movies out of it. There's plenty of material there, and the concept is interesting and unusual. And so often, the stories are exactly the same. And so I thought this really stood out. And I hope that you know, people will. Not only enjoy reading it, but someday perhaps, you know, it will be picked up, because we need these kind of heartwarming stories. I think, you know, having the Hallmark Channel do these Christmas early, I think does help to put people in the mood and to remember what they're supposed to be thinking about here. Not just the materialistic things, but the finding of strength and joy. And you certainly did it in this book.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Well, you know, and of course now Lorelei, I love your name. You're the first Lorelei I've ever met, so I really love it. And Confer, so the last name is Confer. And tell us, you've written two Christmas books?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us about them.
Well, the first one I wrote a number of years ago, Christmas Awakenings, and it's just four short stories of inspiring and uplifting little vignettes, let's say. And it's all about family and what they go through, each family, the four little families, and they all have to go through a trial before they actually find the true meaning, what's really important to them for Christmas. Then the book I wrote this year, A Saddle Creek Christmas Romance, is a follow-up to the Saddle Creek series that I've written about four male friends since childhood. They've grown up together. They've helped each other through all the trials and tribulations of teenage and college years. And when they graduate from high school, they all go in four different ways, but they all end up coming back there, meeting their soulmates, and they had always celebrated Christmas together on Christmas Eve. And this year, all three of them are going to have to go through some hard times to get to learn the what's really true to them for Christmas.
Well, I think, again, as I said, when it comes to Christmas stories, to having heartwarming stories, it is important that people take a little bit of time off of the shopping and read. You know, whether it's a book like Johnny's here that tells about a miracle in his life, and we don't want to give it away, but it is quite an amazing story, Johnny.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's nothing like that's ever happened to me on this planet. So, yeah, I think it's pretty amazing.
It is, and these things can happen. And I've experienced miracles in my own life. And people will say, "Well, it can't be happening," or "You don't have it happening." But it does, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful, and it changes your life.
Yes.
But like I said, you got to be careful with what do you do with it. You know, I mean, you tell people about it, they may want to put you in a booby hatch, or they believe you, but what's it mean? And that's what I had to finally decide. What does it mean? What am I supposed to do with this? And it took me 12 years. And then one morning I woke up and I had this almost anxiety that I had to write this thing. And I took off writing and didn't stop until it was done, and now I'm pretty sure that's what the Lord wanted me to do with it, and I guess it was just His timing. This is when He wanted it written.
Well, in general, in many ways, your whole life is a miracle that you survived Vietnam, doing one of the most dangerous jobs. I mean, as you said, being a machine gunner, you're right out there. You're like in front of everybody else, tried to clear the path, clear the way, and that you survived that. And then you came home to America. At the time, things were not so easy for Vietnam veterans.
No, I came home with a plane load of wounded guys, and I pushed a kid off the C-130 that we landed in El Toro, and he was in a wheelchair, and he had lost his legs, and anyway, he wasn't good. We didn't think he was going to live, and they threw tomatoes at us. So yeah, it was not a real happy homecoming. As a matter of fact, I wasn't home even 48 hours, and somebody spit on my uniform in the Greyhound bus station, and so I knocked him out, and then the police who were arresting a wino nearby dropped the wino and grabbed me and threw me in the back of the squad car. So I was on my way to jail, and I hadn't even been home 48 hours. So yeah, we didn't get a great welcome home.
Yeah, no, it was rough. And then just that you started writing and found your way into writing. Did you ever expect that when you were young?
No, it's something. When I was a little boy, I would write little Batman stories. But I was least likely to ever. The only way I got through English in high school was because I was on the football team, and we didn't have that many players. And, I was never some whiz kid. Started writing when I was teaching martial arts at the University of South Florida and a couple other places, and then I was a mailman during the day, and delivering books to Haslam's bookstore. I blew my back out. I had first blown it out in Nam, jumping out of a chopper when the pilot was killed. But then, I managed to avoid surgery and everything for all those years because I was real fit from martial arts. But then became a mailman. The back went when I was delivering a box of books to Haslam's bookstore.
Well, of all places, it's a very famous bookstore here in St. Petersburg. It's a big, I think it's the biggest store. It's been there forever.
One of the oldest in the Southeast. Certainly,
one of the oldest. And a wonderful, it's dangerous for me to go in there, even today. Although I get 25 free books a week, I walk in that store and I can't resist it. Wonderful bookstore.
You know, the Haslams, Ray Heinstein, his son, they're in this new book because they play a role in this book too.
I know. I thought that was cool. I liked it because, as a matter of fact, years ago they used to have a program on here on Tantalk.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they had their own program. So it's just wonderful always to go into there. So anybody coming down, all you snowbirds who are coming down, you have to head to Haslam's and stock up. And I'm sure you will find Johnny Clark's book there. And I hope that, Carol, do you have your book there?
My books go into like Walmart and Target and all the month that they come out.
Yeah.
But then they're only there a month before they clear. I think they may be in some of the Barnes and Nobles too. Yeah. But then they're with the Harlequin romance lines.
Yeah,
they publish, you know, like 4 to 6 books in each line every month. And so then the stores clear the way for the new books. So usually it's not more than a couple of months.
Okay, well, it is a wonderful bookstore. And you never know, you can arrange something, and they have wonderful book signings. People can go to Haslam's website and find out about their book
signings. Yeah, I just had a book signing
a couple of days ago
for the new book. And they treat you great. It went super.
Well, they're wonderful people, and they've done so much for the readers in our area, and we have to be very grateful to them for what they've done for all of these years. I think 50 years now, it's something like that, a long time, and a wonderful, wonderful bookstore. Now, when so you started writing, that might have been a sign, you know, you're in a bookstore, and you injure your back, and so then you decided to...
I lost my job as a mailman, and then I lost my job teaching martial arts at the University of South Florida. So I lost both jobs in one foomp, and I figured I better find a way to make a living not using my back. And I was still pretty bitter about the way Nam vets were treated and the lies the media was telling about Vietnam. And somebody said, you know, you need to write the truth about what the Marines were doing in Nam. And I said, yeah, you know something, I think you're right. I'm gonna. So I took some creative writing courses at St. Pete Junior College at the time. And I took the same creative writing course 15 times because
this is a funny story. This is a very, very smart way to do it.
Yeah, they would critique 10 pages a week. So I kept taking the class until they had to critique my entire book.
Isn't that clever? I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, but I never thought that thing would actually get published. I just wanted my own kids to be able to read the truth and know that we weren't over there killing women and children, you know, like some of these fruitcakes were trying to tell everybody. And the thing finally got published, but it took 4 years of rejections before Random House published it. But for 4 years, it was rejected by every publisher from California to New York. And so I wallpapered my entire office with rejection notices. That my writing instructor told me that that's a good way to keep up your spirits, to use it as wallpaper. So
that's a good idea.
So that's what I did.
Those days there were real letters too, emails.
Nowadays,
emails aren't as much fun. I've talked to a couple of authors who are a little older, and they still have their rejection letters from some of the famous publishers, and some of that don't exist anymore, and from agents. Both agents and publishers, and they'd love having these. They're collector's items now. So if you have because nobody's ever going to get another rejection letter, you know, typewritten rejection letter. So,
you know, I hadn't thought about that, but I guess it's true.
Oh, no, they're collector's items. Oh, yeah, you can go. There are places where, you know, people now pay money for rejection letters.
I should have kept mine.
Especially, you know, in the olden days, they used to have beautiful letterheads, you know, some embossed and all of those, and lovely linen paper.
Yeah, I used to get some of those.
Yeah, and who knew a rejection letter could turn into, you know, a real asset.
See, you need to save everything.
Yeah, you do. I mean, if I would have known, you know, in those days I had to send out like 100 and just saved it for the quality.
My daughter has saved my original, I originally wrote Guns Up with a pencil. And
she saved it.
She's, my daughter saved a bunch of it. Yeah.
Well, those are valuable.
I hope so. We'll see.
Yeah, you have to save it. And it's so funny. And you wrote that by hand.
Yeah. I wrote it by hand.
And it's, you know, nowadays people are writing everything on the computer, so there's no record of it. Margaret George, who has been on the program, she wrote her book, which is Henry VIII. She wrote that by hand, and it's like 680 pages by hand. And, of course, she rewrote it the second time by hand as she's, you know... And luckily, she saved all of this because it is fascinating to go back and look at the changes and the revisions that are made over time. And it's very educational. And I don't know if people realize, a lot of PhD students write their thesis, you know, on authors, and they love to have the material, you know, like the one who everybody wants anything written by Hemingway, so you can see where he made changes in books along the way. F. Scott Fitzgerald. I think there have been the last count was like 3,400 PhD theses were written about F. Scott Fitzgerald, and everybody travels up to Princeton to see the original documents, so you can see how he, changed things, how he corrected sentences, and it's fascinating. So
yeah, it would be, especially somebody like that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it Guns Up. You know, my kids are hoping this thing's going to be worth that my old stuff is going to be worth something. But that book is, it's in a 35th or 6th printing now, and it's just got published in Lithuania. Yeah, I know. And,
it's funny.
It's just keeps going and going, you know. And I have some Lithuanian black belts in my dojang that I've taught over the years, and they go back to Lithuania. So they went back to Lithuania for vacation, and they bought a bunch of copies of Guns Up, and they brought them back to me. And yeah, it takes about 25 letters to say Guns Up in Lithuania. It's hilarious. But I made them read some of it to me to make sure it actually said what it's supposed to say. And it does. But it's
must give you...
Yeah, oh no, it's great. It's, yeah, you know, it's a real thrill. I get letters from Lithuanian military guys, you know, who are... one that, like I said, some of these things will make you cry, but this one young soldier wrote me and said that this was the greatest book that God ever wrote.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it is an amazing book. It really is. Now, it's nice to have fans in Lithuania. And what about you, Carol and Lorelei? Do your fans contact you?
Yes, I regularly get emails from fans who have read my books. And it's one thing I really like about writing in the Christian market is being able to work that faith thread in, and then getting letters from people, how that has really helped them, you know, overcome some things in their own life, or, you know, how it's touched them and all. So I really enjoy getting those kind of letters.
Well, it is wonderful. And Lorelei, what about you? Do you hear from your fans?
Yes, I have heard from my fans. A lot of times, I just had one that contacted me that wanted a couple of my books for in a Christmas basket or something. It was from a church and wanted to put me to donate the books. And so, of course, I did that. And other ones have told me, especially the new Christmas book, I've had a lot of emails from people that have, thank you for the heartwarming stories. You know, so I get those on a regular basis.
It makes you feel good to know that you've helped people.
Yeah, and even in the reviews that people write, you know, like at Amazon or Goodreads or wherever they do those reviews at, they're all thanking for the heartwarming stories this time of year. Right? They need that little, they need to know that those people survived this and they can too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's an answer. I think it does. It gives you hope. It gives you a feeling that there's something more out there and something that can touch your heart, and that in return you can do something good too. So I love to encourage people to, at Christmas time, and quite a few authors. Tasha Alexander is another author, a famous author who she writes the Lady Emily mystery series that's set in England. And of course, I lived in England for many years. I love any story set in England. And but she writes, she made it a point after, at one point she wrote a little Christmas novella, and then she had the same reaction. People said, well, I took a little time from running around and being, you know, overwhelmed by everything, and I was just sitting there drinking tea and reading your book, and I started to get that Christmas feeling again. I started to get that Christmas hope. And so I think, you know, after that, now she's like on her 10th one, 10 years of it. But it's wonderful to do that and to help people. So, you know, Johnny, for you, you know, your stories, I want to just mention again, you know, you write very serious military side, but where did the humor come in? Where did you?
You mean Section 8?
Yeah, we just ran the promo for it.
Yeah,
you know, I run that quite often. I run the promo because first of all, Ed in the control room, Ed did that promo for you.
It's great.
Isn't it brilliant?
Tell him thanks for me.
Well, right there. Thank you, thanks, Ed. And he saluted you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he did such a brilliant job with that.
He did.
I think it's one of the best book promos I've ever heard.
Well, you know, that book, I mean, a lot of those stories, they came from old Marines. And it as crazy as, you know, as the story is, a lot of the story is based in truth. And at one little part of that that insanity that went on in China in 1946, when the Marines moved into Tianjin, China, and took over at the end of World War II, there were 8 German POWs that they basically got control of that had been running the city of Tianjin for the Japanese. Well, these crazy Marines broke the Germans out of their own POW camp, smuggled them into their barracks, dressed them in Marine fatigues, and then rented them to the city of Tianjin to run the waterworks and the power. And so they turned it into a profit. And, you know, people say, well, it sounds too insane, but they really did some of this crazy stuff. And then the Mary Queen of the Universe Catholic Church. There really was. That was real, too. That was pretty crazy, too. I don't know. That book cracks me up.
It does. I've read it a couple times because it's so funny. And I go back to this, the sort of basic idea that Truman wanted to get rid of the Marines.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I still, every time I think about it, I think he wanted to get rid of the Marines. Really? Like, where he got this idea that, I don't like the Marines. We don't need them.
He was an old doughboy in World War I. And at least this is what, you know, I was told by a lot of the old Marines. He was always angry that the Marines got so much publicity when they went over. No one had been able to take Belle of Wood in the entire World War I. It's like 4 years. It was, nobody could take it. So they sent the Marines in, the 5th Marines, my outfit, and the 5th and 6th Marines fixed bayonets and took it in 24 hours. Now, it was a bloodbath, and they lost an awful lot of guys, but it saved Paris. The French awarded the 5th and 6th Marine Regiments the French Fourragère, which is the only non-Marine Corps issue thing that any Marine's allowed to wear. It's this little pogey rope. It's red and green. And then anybody who sees that, you know that guy's in the 5th Marines or the 6th. But so they say that the Marines got so much publicity because they did some incredible stuff. And Truman was bitter about it, and he was convinced we don't really need a Marine Corps. The Army can do anything the Marines do. And he even had the Marines training Army units under General Marshall to make beach landings because he was determined to get rid of the Marine Corps. But then the Korean War started. See, when he sent the Marines to China, that was just to get them out of the way. And that's where my comedy is. The Marines have been sent to China just basically to get them out of the way and to help Chiang Kai-shek. And so then the Korean War started up, though, and no other units were combat ready.
Who do they call when something really bad happens? They call the Marines.
Correct. We had sent in Army units at the beginning of the Korean War, who weren't combat ready. They had been falsifying their combat readiness. They were an occupying army in Japan, and they weren't training. They were, you know, a lot of these kids in the Army at that time didn't even know how to use their 2.5 rocket launchers. So when the Russian tanks came at them across North Korea, they didn't even know how to use the only weapon they had to stop these tanks. And one whole battalion of soldiers was butchered. And long story short is finally MacArthur said, "Give me the Marines." And they sent the Marines in. It stopped the Koreans for their first defeat during a whole war at Pusan. Then MacArthur again pulled those Marines out of the line and made the famous Incheon landing, and the rest is history. But if we hadn't had the Marines, we would have lost the Korean War, because while the Marines, you know, they were being shrunk, but all they do is train. That's all a Marine does, is you train to kill the enemy, and you train combat all the time. You don't sit around as an occupying army in Japan and drink beer. You know, they they were the only combat ready troops we had, and thank God we still had them.
Yeah.
Well, we only had one regiment of them.
Well, thank God we did, because as I said, I know, having lived overseas and knowing, American military and being in different areas of the world, there is nothing more comforting than to know that there is a Marine out there to protect you. Then you really feel protected. So, I'm always grateful for your service. And that's why when I talk to people who like just history or military, I say they just have to read Johnny Clark, because your books, the ones that are we'll call nitty gritty. I mean, they're tough books. You really know your stuff, and you get so many wonderful compliments from all the generals and all the military. But it's wonderful that the generals will recommend your books be read. And
It was on the commandant's list.
Yeah,
not all the generals know it, but all the Marines do. there was an awards ceremony in Cincinnati when they gave me the Silver Star, and all these young Marines were there. It was 2,000 Marines there, but a bunch of young Marines, and they were getting awards, Sergeant of the Year, in the Corps and things like that. So a bunch of young Marines were there, and when they gave me the Silver Star, I went back and sat at a table, and soon I was surrounded by all these young Marines, and I'm thinking, what's this about? Well, they're going, "Are you the Johnny? You wrote the book." And they didn't call it by its title. They call it the book.
The book.
The book. And I said, "You mean Guns Up?" And they said, "Yes, sir, the book." And I said, "Yeah, I wrote it." And I said, "As a matter of fact, Chan is sitting right here, who is a star in that book. He was my A gunner in Nam." Soon, though, the general, the commandant, came over, and of course, everybody came to attention, and he goes, "So what's this about?" And they said, "Sir, this is Johnny Clark." And he goes, I know, I just put the Silver Star on him." And they go, "No, he wrote the book." And this poor general, he looked like a deer in the headlights. He's surrounded by all these young Marines that are going, "The book, the book." He had no clue what they were talking about. But that later that night, he sent a young major to my hotel room with his address at came in and said, "Sir, the general requires the book as soon as possible. He will never be embarrassed in front of his troops again." So I sent him all the books, and he wrote me a letter from Korea where they were doing maneuvers. And he said, "Dear Mr. Clark, I will never be embarrassed like that in front of my troops again. I can't believe I have not read the book. But I assure you, it will be read."
Oh, that's fantastic. That wonderful story. Well, you're a natural storyteller. That's why I think the writing comes so naturally to you, because you are a great storyteller. Now, Carol and Lorelai, tell us a little bit about your background, how you really found this love of writing.
Okay. I have always loved to write. Even as a kid, I was one of these weird students who actually enjoyed doing book reports and research papers and stuff for school. And at the time growing up, the only creative writing I did was writing poetry. And it wasn't until the 90s that I decided to try writing some articles for magazines. And so I got some of those published in like children's publications and religious publications. And it was probably the late 90s that I decided to try my hand at writing a novel, because I've always been an avid reader from the time I was in elementary school. And so I had a pretty good idea of, you know, how to put a story together and all. And so I got my first book done, ready to submit, and got rejected and quit writing for a few years. Then the bug bit again, and I wrote another one and submitted it and got rejected and quit again.
But you continued on.
But yes, what I ended up doing was, in 2009, I had another book ready to submit and all. And my problem then was I did not know any other writers, and I didn't realize that rejection was all part of the process. I was used to succeeding in things that I had tried and everything. And so it wasn't until I was ready to submit and I got online and was looking up how to do synopses and query letters, and found a website where they had all of these synopses and query letters that had gotten people their first contract, romance authors. And all the query letters mentioned that they belonged to Romance Writers of America.
It is a wonderful, wonderful organization.
Yes.
And, you know, the one in Tampa, for all of you romance authors or in the area, you have to go there. Just a wonderful group of people, very enthusiastic. Now, you have a website that you want people to go to?
Yes. My website is caroljpost.com.
And it's very pretty. I like a very fancy. You have a very fancy-looking website.
My daughter is my web designer.
Okay.
She's
very romantic. All full of nice flowers, and it's got a, and you obviously you've done a lot of like blog postings too. That, yeah.
Yeah, not as much as I probably should. I do have a blog, but it's not super active. But you can go back and read my prior posts.
So her website is Carol J Post. And what about you, Lorelai? You have a nice website too, I see. Moving Clouds. Ooh. Yeah.
LoreleiConfort.com.
Okay, and people can see more about you and discover more about you and your books and your short stories and some reviews there. So, and it's a real easy name to remember, Lorelai. I love it. And Johnny, you have a nice website too.
Girl Friday. She
did that for you.
Yeah, she's, her real name's Tori McGee. Isn't that a great name? I love that name.
That's a great name, too.
Yeah. She's brilliant.
We have some pictures of you there. Wow. That looks like heavy gear that you were weighted down with, huh?
Yeah, pretty heavy. And that picture, I don't have the machine gun.
I was going to say, you're not carrying the big machine gun. And still. Well, you are quite amazing, and I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. And as I said, each of the stories in the Christmas series are wonderful, and there's more romance there. And with Johnny, military books are are always sort of my top choice. If I'm going to read just, it's been like that all my life, ever since I read Caesar's Gallic Wars, I've always wanted to read military books. Since high school, when I studied Latin, I just got hooked on military books. And so there's nothing better than Johnny Clark's. And Johnny is spelled with a double N, Johnny Clark. I love that spelling. That's from a West Virginia spelling, isn't it?
Yeah, my mom, hillbillies. I-E, too.
That's what I was going to say. I-E, yeah. Johnny.
Yeah. I-E. Paris Island, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Johnny. Drill instructors love stuff
I would have liked to be a drill instructor. It's really nice. You know, I love Big Ed here in the control room because when we finish a program, he always salutes me. And I salute him. Do you have to salute drill instructors?
Oh, no.
No, you don't.
You only salute officers.
You don't salute drill instructors, although if they wanted you to.
They'll make you practice.
Oh, they'll make you practice. So I'm not sure if I was cut out to be a drill instructor. I think my son might say that because he's home from school and... I wake him up. I wake him up. Let's just say, I tend to be very. I'm awake in the mornings, and I believe in waking people up in the morning. So he might think of me as a drill instructor. I think I'm more, general material. I would have been a general. That's why I really love when Big Ed salutes me every time because, it just makes me feel good. Maybe that's what generals need. They just need to be made. You need to make them feel good. Is that what you'd have to do, Johnny?
Make them feel good. Maybe. I don't know. I never got to talk to too many generals. Not too many.
Well, you did the hard work, and it's really wonderful that you've been on the program a couple of times, and we play this promo for you quite often because I love it. I love it, and it's just so it's so wonderful just to know you, and I'm so very, very proud. I always loved Marines, but to know that you're our official Marine here. And
it's a great honor. It really is.
Well, we really love you. And again, as I always tell everyone, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky to hear those very magic words, lights, camera, action. And your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or perhaps a wonderful, wonderful mini movie of the week on Hallmark. And this is one of the things that can happen to you. But it all happened. What do you have to do in order for that to happen? Everybody, you have to what? You have to write the book. Get out there and write. I mean, it is so much fun. Find that joy on paper. And the three of you have done it. And you've brought joy into other people's lives by doing it. So I want to thank you. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving. And thank you, Ed, for rescuing me when I lost my voice because he's fast. And I appreciate everything he does. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving. Bye-bye now.